My name is Farrakhan. I'm an addict. And I want to thank God for being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and to be anywhere in recovery. And I truly thank him for this moment in time. For I know that now more than ever than before, without his grace, his unmerited favor, a dope fiend like me at the age of 54 will be inside Ocean City trying to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. I want to thank the committee for allowing me once again to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I hope that God will use me as he sees fit. But see, one thing about me, I always get to the exact nature of how I feel. And as I stay here, I'm beginning to recognize more and more and more how bad this disease is.
Yeah.
This disease will bamboozle you at any given moment. I came here with high hopes and good spirit. And me and my sister came to share our experience, our strength, and our hope. And the disease came with us. The disease was locked in.
Yeah.
See, we didn't see it, but he was here already waiting for us to sit down. So we can become at odds with each other. But see, I know today that if I got a God in my life and I say I try to do what God's will is and not what mine's is, then I kind of sit down and I calm down and I pray. And I allow God to work in my life again. Because I come here to share a message of hope. I don't come here to be at odds with anyone. But I know how this disease works, though. See, I got a disease that will never be comfortable. Now, the topic is give time sometime. It didn't say give time. It said sometime. So, me being a dope fiend, I have never in my life given time sometime. I might have been doing sometime, but I never gave time any time. You know, I understand that because my experience tells me that. See, my experience tells me I'm the kind of dope fiend that wants what he wants when he wants it. And at all costs, I'll try to achieve what I want. And because of that kind of mentality, for a long time, my mind turned against me. You know, this program, Narcotics Anonymous, has given me so much hope and so much insight on me by the grace of God. See, because I can never put God out of the picture because I know who got me here. See, many times my people prayed and like many times my people told me, listen, won't you stop? You know, I didn't raise you that way. Look at you. What's wrong with you? You need your ass whipped. You know what I'm saying? That's how my life was. Because I never wanted to do things according to how things are supposed to have been done. See, I have a disease that'll let me know that I'm antisociable at any given moment. At any given moment. I got a disease that will, like I said, bamboozle me. You know, make me think that I'm right when I'm dead ass wrong and know I'm wrong.
Yeah.
See, that's what my disease do to me. So never in the process of me trying to grow up did I give time any time. I always wanted things right away. So when I saw the guys in Bed-Stuy with the Gators and the, you know, like the Converse sneakers and the Blind Shop sweaters, see, I wanted that stuff. Because my mother was on farewell. You know what that means, backwards welfare.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm a kind of guy that must always clock into my story in order to talk about what I got to talk about. Because, see, I'm the kind of guy that came off welfare eating yellow grits. You know, eating Spam in the can. Eating that thick peanut butter. And that cheese that kept me ass stopped up for a long time. See, I'm the kind of guy that lived like that. You know, so I'm the kind of guy that never wanted to wait for nothing. See, I'm the kind of guy that always wanted to be in charge of shit. And every time I did that, I messed my life up. 19 years in prison because I didn't give time. Like I said, I was doing time. Because my life had become what you call an illusion. And today I recognize that the only reality is God. Everything else is an illusion. Everything else will pass away. He's the only thing that's permanent. So as I come to understand these things, right, and I looked outside of myself and I saw the guys in my neighborhood and I saw my role models. And my role models was like the pimp, the hustlers, the prostitutes. I didn't say a hoe, I said a prostitute. Two different things. Because I come out of that lifestyle. See, a hoe will do anything for $5. A prostitute, if you talk to them, you got to pay them. You got to pay them. You know, so let's not get it twisted. Because I hear a lot of people talking about I was a hoe. No, you was a sex exchanger. If you got $5, you were changing sex for $5. Hoes, prostitutes don't do that. I'm clear on that, why that's my lifestyle. Once again, looking outside of myself, didn't want to be myself. So I always wanted to be somebody else. So when I started hustling in my neighborhood and the fly guys in my neighborhood, that's what I wanted to be. Because see, in 1962, I was wearing gaiters in 1962 when it was $85 and it was called Chuck Gaiters. I was getting my clothes made. You know what I'm saying? I was jumping out the number one car at that time was a Cadillac. I had the number one sneaker, which was a Converse, it cost $8.99. I had the Diamond Cluster, I had the Beaver Cap, the Apple Scooter, the Quarterfield, the Saratogas, and the Dots. You know, I went to Madison Center. I went to the Dome. Listen to Eddie Palmieri, you know what I'm saying? Tito Puente, you know what I'm saying? Joe Batan. Knew how to Latin, because when I came up, he had to be slick and smooth. See, a guy that worked 9 to 5, he was a sucker. So I fought. I didn't have no role models in my neighborhood. The role models were like Pete Mooney, Bosco, Fluji, Bowlegged Esther, Black Mary, Baby Jane. You know what I'm saying? These are the women and men that I've seen in my neighborhood. But what attracted me to them was the lifestyle and that they were saying shit like I ain't working nowhere, but they wore the best of clothes. Jumped out of flies, cars. A lot of us are getting minks now. We had minks in 62. Ain't nothing new to me. That didn't keep me clean. Because I thought it was all about me. And see, anytime I learn, anytime I become self-centered, I'm no longer God-centered. So I begin to look outside of myself. And I want to be everybody else. You know what I'm saying? And so for 30 years, because I didn't give time, I used heroin for 27 years, and I used crack for 3 years. Now, let's look at this shit again. 27 years of heroin. 3 years of crack. See, one thing about crack will let me know. No, crack let me know long before I came here with the 12 and 12 that my life was fucked up. I didn't need no 12 and 12 to let me know that I was fucked up. Because I was wearing the same guy that wore gaiters, I was wearing foot foolers. Shoe at the top and no shoe at the bottom. You know what I'm saying? I was no longer getting haircuts. You know what I'm saying? I was eating Little Debbie's. I ate so many motherfucking Little Debbie's, if I see that motherfucker, I choke. That's how many Little Debbie's I ate. That's how I live. You know? Because, see, we have a tradition, in the third tradition, right, in the Works High and Why, it talks about we should always give that new person some identification. See, I don't claim to be someone who want to come here and get deep on you. Because usually when you get deep, you get buried. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know what the fuck you're talking about no more. See, I come here for a plain, simple message of Narcotics Anonymous. That if I don't pick up, I won't get high, and my life will get better day at a time. Anything else is gravy. If I get some shit back, it's gravy. Because when I first got here, like many of us, I wanted a Walkman. I wanted a sweatsuit. I wanted a cap to match the sweatsuit. You know what I'm saying? I wanted a pair, when I came around, it was Adidas. I wanted a pair of Adidas, and I wanted me one of them N.A. girls. No question in my mind about that. Now, I was in a shelter. Didn't get time, no time. Now, listen, in a shelter. Because I ain't going to spray for my topic if you follow me. I was in a shelter. Came in the meeting, had about 97 days. She smiled, I smiled. She smiled again. Goddamn, she want me. No, she want me. She got a car, I'm walking. She got a house, I'm in the shelter. She got money, I ain't got none. She liked me, me too. Real simple, me too. You know what I'm saying? Because I came of a lifestyle of hustling and pimping. That's where I come from, hustling and pimping. And see, back then, when I was coming up, like I said, I'm 54 years old, right? When I was coming up, we didn't call it pimping, we called it management. It was called management. You know what I'm saying? So I was doing that kind of well. You know what I'm saying? But the bottom line is that when I picked up, I fucked up. See, I never knew about the lifestyle and how things come with it. Now, I know I got a disease. Don't get me wrong. I know I read literature, and it says about long before we picked up drugs, we had this disease. Now, I understand that because at 7 years old, I got put out of school because I thought the teacher's pocketbook was mine. Because I'm going to keep taking the motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? So I know about that. My mother can teach me how to lie, how to hitchhike buses and shit, on back of buses and shit, how to go around stealing. That was self-taught behavior. Because my mother always told me, go to school. Be somebody. Don't mess with nothing that's not yours. You know I hear that shit. Didn't hear none of that kind of stuff. So I began to pick up those kind of traits. Those, what we call, well, I know today was kind of defects, but I call them my defense skills, my defense mechanisms. You know what I'm saying? These are my skills. You know, I got to do this because I got to get you before you get me, which is a lot of bullshit, But for so long, I lived like that, right? So now, here it is. I come into a program, and they tell me I got to rechange my life. Now, here go a man, never worked nowhere in his life, always had women and other things to take care of me. You know, never thought that I, at the end of my addiction, I would be a bum. Never thought, like many others of us, who said yes when he wanted to say no. I became that guy. See, I became the guy that would sleep with women and would sleep with men. There was no problem with me. See, I can talk about me today because if I've done some work on me, I got the courage to talk about me. And if somebody said, ooh, ah, you did that, well, evidently, either you ain't working on yourself or you ain't talking about yourself. You know what I'm saying? Because I know in order for me to change, then I got to get in touch with me. Now, my sponsor told me one time, he said, listen, if you don't feel nothing, don't go look for nothing. Because I just want to come inside here and identify with people when they talk about their father, and they never saw their father before, so right away I wanted to, well, I ain't feeling that way. I never knew my father. I never seen my father. How come I don't feel sad? My sponsor told me, listen, boy, if you don't feel nothing, don't look for nothing. Real simple. See? Because I didn't know. Because I wanted to catch up rather than catch on. See, I wanted to be like everybody else. And in the process, like I said, being like everybody else, I lost Farrakhan. Listen, I was born in 1946. So Frankie Lyman was my idol. So I wanted to be Frankie Lyman. You know what I'm saying? The 60s came around, Motown came about. You know I want to be a leader of Temptations. You know? You know what I'm saying? And at the end, I was like, Marvin Gaye, what the fuck's going on? Fucked up that day. That's how I was. Because I never took time to take control of my life. I always wanted things the faster, softer, and easy way. And I'm learning today that there's no right way of doing the wrong thing. See, I'm learning today that I don't no longer have to live in the fifth step, put the image of masses on no more. I can be me today and feel comfortable with me. So I can come into a meeting and tell you I'm HIV positive, but listen, I'm okay. I'm living today. I mean, look at me. 54 years old, I look good. Now, everybody got to tell me, fuck y'all, I know I look good. Everybody got to tell me. I'm convinced, listen, smooth skin, clear eyes, you know what I'm saying? $175. When I was wearing 50 pounds one time, and people in my area know that, I was wearing 50 pounds. Came to the meeting in the wheelchair wearing 94 pounds. Look at me now, by the grace of God. Nothing that the doctors did. Because see, if God don't put a period, then listen, who can? And I got to ask myself, if God seems far, I got to ask myself, who moved? Because I know he ain't went nowhere. And my brother always say, if God has brought me this far, without my cooperation. Imagine if I cooperate. Imagine where I'll be if I cooperate. Imagine if I stop looking at the outside of, judging my outside by you, by what I see in you, and start getting with me. Because I'm learning that this program teaches Farrakhan how to get with Farrakhan. Because see, sometimes you hear some slick shit to talk about, it's not about the drugs no more, it's only a symptom of the problem. Yes, but you better read that motherfucking literature. It says it's a major symptom. It's a major one. Because listen, did nothing else get me here but drugs. No relationship. I got put out of my house. Kids didn't act right. You know what I'm saying? Lost my job. What got me here was drugs. I didn't pay rent because I used drugs. I didn't buy food because I used drugs. Listen, I used to have a pocket full of money and I would buy a 25-cent bag of peanuts. And my disease would tell me, not only are you full, but peanuts got proteins, you healthy too. You know what I'm saying? That, listen, that's how my disease played on me. So I was never able to look at life on life's terms until I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and started being me. See, and start accepting me. Start liking me. See, I'm not one to say I like me a little bit. I love me a hell of a lot. Because
yes.
I know where God has brought me from. I know, this is why whenever I share, I say, without his unmerited favor, without his grace. That means nothing I have to do with it. I ain't earned nothing. You know what I'm saying? I ain't all that. Because see, anytime God put you someplace and you don't appreciate it, he'll remove you. And he'll give the blessing to somebody else. So why should I think now that God has brought me where he brought me from and for me to get all substantive in me? But I got a disease that would tell me it's all about me. So I got a disease that never wants me comfortable, always want me off balance. Always want me to look outside of myself and look as though you're trying to do something to me. You know, you got me feeling the way I'm feeling. But a long time ago, I learned that I don't allow people to give me feelings I don't have. This comes through sponsorship. This comes through men and women in my life who taught me some stuff, who helped me improve my character. Because at any given moment, I feel comfortable being Lawrence Graham. I don't feel comfortable sometimes being Farrakhan. Because Farrakhan is sometimes like a sucker. But Lawrence Graham is a guy that can come back at you. You know what I'm saying? Like a pit bull. And listen, don't realize the consequences sometimes that might happen. See, I got a mind to tell me I can do you. My mind never tell me you can do me. That's the kind of disease I live with. See, we was in a restaurant talking this morning, me and my brother and my sponsor brother, right? We was talking about how if you carrying a gun, then that means you're not relying on God. That means God is nowhere in the equator. If you got to carry a weapon, I don't care if it's a fingernail file, a little pen knife, you ain't relying on God. You bullshit. Because, see, if I got a God in my life and he has restored me to some form of sanity, then I know that if I don't put myself in harm's way, he's not going to let me walk through harm's way. Most of the time that I go through pain is pain that I cause on myself. When she says no and I want her to say yeah. Because I want what I want when I want it. I'm the man. What the fuck? I'm the man. Don't ask me how I feel. I'm the man. No, I ain't shit. See, I'm a guy that try to hide from my feelings because I never want to get in touch with some stuff sometimes. I remember before I got married, right? Because I'm married now. I'm going to give you an update, Baltimore. So I'm married now. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't married before. I was all over the place. You know? Listen. I'm telling you, just listen. I try to share nuts sometimes. But I'm going to tell you something. I was getting more pussy on accident than motherfuckers was getting on purpose. You know what I'm saying? Just because I was sharing. Now, that's not nothing slick to say. You know why it's not slick? I thought it was when I first started doing that. But see, as you work on yourself, you understand that you trying to get God-centered rather than self-centered, you allow yourself to stop being used by yourself. Because nobody uses me more than I use me. If a right pair of dungarees pass by right now, all the shit I'm saying now might change my motherfucking mind. I don't fool myself. See, I don't live in no illusion. Because I know I need maintenance on a consistent basis. Because I got a mind to tell me you 54 years old, you got the virus, you better get busy now because you might not be busy next week. See, when I start thinking like that, I'm removing God again. Because if God has afforded me to do what I do and to look the way that I look, and not because it's Vaseline, because ain't none, ain't because I took no shower, it's by his grace. So I understand today that when I come and I share my experience with hope, I'm no longer sharing for me. I'm being used as an instrument, as a tool, to let that newcomer know that no matter what you go through, if you don't pick up, guess what, your life will get better. If you don't pick up, things will get better. No matter what, you don't use. I don't care what topic they give me, you don't use. Because for me, it's not about using no more. So now, here it is. I come into the rooms, giving time some time. Like I said, I was just all over the place. She smiled. I smiled back. She got a problem. Let me talk to you. I'm a counselor all of a fucking sudden. When I got literally said that we're not counselors inside here, but I can help you with the problem. Let's go for coffee. And see, my mind wasn't on helping nobody. My mind was on helping me. Because, see, I was still caught up. See, when I did my fourth step, I understand one of my character defects was lust. I mean, I just like it. But see, as I work on myself, I got better because I begin to get women in my life. You know what I'm saying? I begin to get men in my life. And I struggle, but I begin to get men and women in my life that help me become a better person. You know what I'm saying? Because see, I need men to help me become a man. I need women to help me to respect a woman. Because I'm a firm believer that there's no such thing as a no good woman. Anytime you meet a no good woman, she met a no good man to make it that way. Because her nature ain't like that. See, I mean, so I don't know all this shit. So I'm trying to think that it's all about me. See, I didn't know. Long time ago, the old man told me, guy named Roadrunner. He set me down. He said, let me tell you something. He said, don't ever think that you pull a woman. She know what she going to do as soon as she see your ass. She know whether she going to get with you or she ain't going to get with you. So all that shit you trying to talk, please, stop all that. You get a fucking asthma attack with that bullshit. Because she knows what she's going to do. But you couldn't tell me that because I was game tight. See, I'm the guy that sold TVs in the box with no TV.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? See, I'm the guy that sold you a phone so you touch it, motherfucker, fall apart. So how can you tell me that? But see, out of all that, though, at the end of my addiction, smoking crack, because I got to tell this crack story a little bit. Smoking crack. Crack took me to fucking places that Voyager, Star Trek, The Final Conflict, all that shit don't even go. I mean, crack made me wear pants that was so high, if my socks caught a fire, pants never know. That's how, I mean, crack fucked me up. Crack had me wearing shitty drawers, pull them up like I had a pair of clean ones on. I'm serious. I mean, crack made me a cowboy rustler. That means going to Bohacks and A&P and Key Foods and taking up and taking people's meat. Open up sandwich bread, open up meat, open up bread, make a motherfucking sandwich right in the middle of the store. I didn't realize I was asking for help. I didn't realize that after I came here. I wanted some, listen, they say the two things, either you get arrested or you get rescued. I was trying to get both, arrested and rescued. Because I was fucked up that day. I grew an afro, it was in 89, I was not a member of Jackson 5. You know, had a motherfucking big ass afro, never round, just afro. You know what I'm saying? Fuck that. You know? But today, man, listen, I remember smoking crack, right? And like, you know, you smoke crack, you're king for a day. So they sit you in the best chair. You know, and in the best chair is the one that got the sheet over it that burns the cigarette holes up. A couple of cigarette holes, right? Put you in the best chair. So I'm telling motherfuckers to go to the store, motherfuckers bumping each other, boom, boom, everything I say, they doing. Every joke I say is funny. Joke is corny as a motherfucker, but they laughing. You know what I'm saying? But then when the money started to dwindle, they took my ass from the living room and put me in the kitchen. Now, most of y'all know the kitchen is close to the goddamn door. Because the next move is going to be the door. Because I'm no longer king for a day. That didn't tell me nothing. I watched these people run back and forth for me. But when I got dead ass broke, sitting on that couch, couldn't move, because at the end of my addiction, I could smoke crack, take one pull, I'm paranoid. I'm stuck, can't talk, put my shit down like this. She moved my shit. I'm trying to say, put it back, I'm pointing. Because I can't say nothing. Fucked up, I can't say nothing. I want to say, put my shit back, but I can't say nothing. I'm just pointing. And they knew it. You know what I'm saying? Now, why would I want to come inside a program called Narcotics Anonymous and resort back to that kind of behavior? Why would I want to come inside the rules of Narcotics Anonymous and for the first time in my life got a real commitment with my 14 children? Why would I want to come back and just leave that man? And my babies, they all of them grown, like 18, the 34, all of them grown. But today I'm able to be a father. Because when I was blessed to help make some of them babies, I was nodding so much, I would go down, it would be spring, come up in summer, go back down in winter, next thing you know it's fall. I'm all fucked up. See, I never gave time. Listen, wham, bam, you know what I'm saying, that dumb shit. You know, but by the grace of God, right, is that this program has given me so much hope. Today, I go back to school. Today, I'm going to school for my, you know, like to get my GED. Right? Now, I'm in school. I'm saying, be quiet. I'm in school, right? Now, y'all told me that to raise my hand and ask questions that I don't know. Y'all told me to sit up front, learn to listen, listen to learn. I'm doing all that. But now I'm 54 years old. I'm in school with motherfuckers that's 22, 23, 24, maybe 25. Now, oh, it's all right, but when I'm trying to study and I'm trying to look studious, like I know what the fuck I'm doing, I'm trying to build me some self-esteem up. See, I'm trying to get some more self-esteem. Now, I'm trying to build myself up. All of a sudden, the door slam, pop open, bam! Young boys come in. Hey, Pop! What's going on, Pop? Pop over here. Now, guess what? They pants are down here. So I know when they go to the bathroom, all the fuck they do is sit down. But the pants are right down there. They ain't got to pull nothing down. Let's sit the fuck down. And they calling me Pop. So now, I don't let my ego get in the way. Because I got a reason to tell them I'm always right. So I don't let my ego get in the way. So I conjure up some slick shit to say back. I said, okay, I'm Pop. But if you keep laying down, waking up, you get old too. See? Because I'm going to tell you something. If you're 30 years old, or you're 25 years old, and you have letters behind your name, I commend you. But if you're 30 years old, and I'm 54, don't ever think that you got more life experience than me. Don't ever think that you know more about life than me. And why I'm saying that, because I see a lot of people come in here, and they disrespect the old timers. They disrespect people with time. Because guess what? If you keep living, you'll get some more experiences too. But the only way you get those experiences is by listening to those who have had them already. I didn't come in here knowing none of this shit I'm talking. I came here talking slick shit, thinking about it is about me, thinking about everything that I do, it must be centered around self. Rather than trying to be selfless, I was selfish. Never wanted to give nothing. It's only through the program of Narcotics Anonymous that I come here a day at a time, try to give time some time, try to be the best person that I can be in any given time. Because my thinking is fucked up. My image time. You know, young boy says to me sometimes, my mind say, you can fuck him up. My body said, don't start that shit. Don't even start that shit. Because I know after 3 minutes, I'm fucked up. I don't fool myself. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to live that lifestyle no way. My name is Farrakhan. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Again, my name is Alexandra. I'm an addict. I want to thank Farrakhan for that message of hope. Next speaker will be Desiree.
Hi, everybody. My name is Desiree. I'm an addict. I'm real nervous. Everybody, a lot of people in here know I can talk. I want to thank the committee for letting me get up here. I've kind of always wanted to do this. I don't know, this morning when I got up, I started sweating and I had to go to the bathroom and I stood outside, and then I took my coat off, and, you know, my toes moving around. I feel like I had about 2 hours of sleep, and so I'm real, real nervous. Anyway, you know, when I was thinking about the topic, I kept thinking about, you know, what could I possibly say about giving time some time? Well, I don't know. But what I do know is I came from a household, you know, I'm an only child, and I came in, when I came into this world, I was one of those kids that pretty much got everything they wanted when they were a kid. And I would look under the Christmas tree and I would always say to myself, well, where's the Barbie doll? And where's this? And where's that? And I've never been satisfied with what I received. So when I got in high school, I had moved to San Francisco from Florida, and I was one of them round people. You know, I used to just be round. And I had an afro, and I had a southern accent. And so I'm out here in California, and people talking about granola bars and diets, and, you know, everybody have, they got hair all the way down to here, and I got this afro, and I got this acne, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, what I can do. And so some folks told me, they said, why don't you drink some Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill and smoke a joint? It'll make you feel better. So what I decided was, I decided to drink the Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill and smoke the joint. I didn't care how I looked then. It didn't matter. I was still round. I still had this afro. And I still had this acne. But I just kept drinking and smoking weed, you know. And I thought I was all right. You know, I kind of thought that it would make me mellow, you know, and I wouldn't be so angry, you know. And that was the kind of way I kind of figured I'd deal with life. And so I kept on doing this and kept on doing that. And, you know, people started telling me stuff like, you know, you look bad. You know, why don't you get a job? You know, why don't you take a bath? You know. I said, now why are they talking to me like that? So what I would do is I would put a lot of perfume on top of funk, right? You know, and I would take dirty clothes and iron them. You know, because I couldn't take my money and put clothes in the cleaners, and I couldn't take my money and wash clothes, and I couldn't take my money and get my hair done. I had too many other things to do, like buy pounds of weed, you know what I mean, buy half quarters of cocaine, you know, and stuff like that. So as this time was going on, you know, I sort of think about, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, they have a lot of topics like hurt people, you know, and stuff like that. So I decided to, you know, I needed some people with me because I couldn't do this by myself. And the only way that it could make sense to me was to have a whole lot of people around me validating me. See, I needed a lot of people around me so when I had this weed or cocaine, it didn't matter. But I just needed these people around me to help me feel like, well, if they doing it, I'm doing it, it must be all right. So when people would tell me stuff like, get a job, well, they not working. I don't need to get no job because they not working. You know, and I started getting put out of places back in the 70s. You know, people would put me out of places. And you know, and I would always call my mother and tell my mother, you know, they put me out. And she said, well, what did you do? I said, well, I didn't pay the rent. And she said, well, that's why they put you out. You know, and I thought they were supposed to let me stay there even though I wouldn't pay the rent. Well, I don't know if I was giving time some time, but what I think I was doing was buying some time, you know. I was buying some time for my bottom. You know, I needed to kind of prepare myself for this bottom I was getting ready to hit. You know, so I kept on going on like that. And finally, what I decided to do was I thought that San Francisco, it had too much going on. So I decided that I would move to Washington. And in Washington, D.C., they got a liquor store on every corner. And they got a crack house on every corner. And so I moved to Washington, D.C. thinking that because D.C. had the phrase chocolate city, as chocolate as I was, I figured I could make it. So I moved here. And when I moved here, I got a good little job, right? And I met this guy. And when I met, and I thought I had died and went to heaven. You know, he was a drug dealer, and so I figured, well, I don't have to buy no more drugs, you know. I ain't never got to buy no more drugs in my life. This is going to be all right. And in 1987, I hit the pipe. And when I hit the pipe, I was a lot like Farrakhan. When I hit the pipe, I said, oh, my God, everybody ought to smoke crack. This is all right. You know, we used to sit back and listen to the jazz and, you know, pat your foot, you know, and just be sitting there. And I sat in places for days. Then days turned into weeks. And then I'd get a bright idea that I ought to sell something. Now, I never was the type of person that knew anything about hustling. I don't know nothing about hustling. I sell, you know, gold chains for $5 for a hit. That's the kind of person I am. I take TVs that cost $400 and sell them for a 20. You know, I take leather coats and sell them for a hit. You know, and then I crawl around on the floor like this. And then I start picking stuff off people, you know. Like I walk up to them and brush their clothes and get to picking, you know, like this. You know, I turn the pockets inside out looking for money. And you know, this is the part to get me. You smoke crack, right? I would say, like, when I would get a job, right, I'd get paid, right? And I'd say, okay, I'd go get all these money orders, right? I'm going to pay the rent. Because my mother told me 20 years before that the reason why you kept getting put out is because you don't pay the rent. So I would get the rent money order. I would get the light bill money order. I would get the gas bill money order. And then I would have $20, and I'd say, I'm going to get one. And I would get one, and by 11:30, I was at 7-Eleven, cashing in the money order. They taking some money off the money order so they could cash them. And by 4 o'clock, I'm looking in the trash can for some matches because I'm trying to take the straight shooter and flip the screen and trying to get one more hit because I'm trying to figure out what can I do to get these shakes off me like this. And then you get to, you know, and then you start looking out windows and the police coming, you know, and then you go stand outside, you know, and then I get to looking in car. And I was like him too. I couldn't talk, you know, so when the cars would roll by, all I could do was point and do my head up and down, hoping that they would understand that I'm trying to tell them, can you come? He's talking about rescuing me. You know, I wanted help, but I didn't realize I had a problem. See, I thought it was the white man. And I thought it was sexism. You know, I never even equated it to addiction. Had no clue. No clue whatsoever that I had a problem with drugs. I just thought that I didn't have enough money. Because the only time I regretted getting high was when I ain't had no money. And I used to say, damn, I done messed up again. So I would get another check, right? And I'd try it again. I say, okay, this time I'm going to pay the rent. I'm going to make the money order out because I used to get blank money orders. So this time I'm going to get the money order and I'm going to write the people's names on them. That don't work either. That doesn't work either. What happens is you can take them back to the place and they'll take some money off of it and they'll give you the money. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the trash can again looking for some matches. And then the man ended up putting me out the place, and he put me out the place, and I'm walking up and down the street now, and I'm trying to figure out, damn, what happened? You know, I'm standing on corners. And then I'd get down to one corner, and I would say to myself, okay, it's more happening down here at this other corner. So I'd go stand at the other corner. And then when I get down there, I'd look down at the other corner, and it looked like it was more going on down there. So all I could do was walk up back up and down the street. I went from 7th Street to 9th Street, from 9th Street to 7th Street, from 7th Street to 9th Street, from 9th Street to 7th Street, you know, like that for a long, long time. And a friend of mine came, and she drove up, and she said, Desiree, you stink. She said, Desiree, you need to get some help. I didn't have a clue what she was talking about. So this lady gave me $1, and I went to D.C. General Detox. And when I went to D.C. General Detox in February of 1990, I didn't think anything about this program. They made us go to meetings. They made us sit up in group. And they told us to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, get a sponsor, pray. Well, I said, I ain't want to do that. You know, I wasn't interested in getting clean. I wasn't interested in stop using. I figured that if I just didn't smoke no crack. See, crack was the problem. It wasn't the Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. It wasn't the weed. So I could go back to drinking. And this was my plan. So I came in the program, and I came to an NA meeting, right? And I saw people all dressed up. And they had gold. And they had pagers. And they had cell phones. And they had matching clothes. I said, well, hell, if I had that too, I guess I'd go to a meeting too, right? Now, instantly, I caught a resentment. Now, I think that when I first came in the program, I wasn't really interested in giving time some time. I wanted 5 years. I wanted the pager. I wanted the car. I wanted the gold. I ain't want to do nothing y'all was talking about. I ain't want to pick up no ashtrays. I ain't want to leave no meetings. I just wanted 5 years, a pager, some matching clothes, and some gold. So I would sit in meetings and I would character assassinate people. That's what I would do. I said, they lied. They can't be telling the truth. Why would somebody get up there and talk like that? Ain't no way. I'm not doing none of that. Just give me the basket, and I'll see y'all later. You know, that's kind of the way I thought it. I said, well, just give me the basket, and then I'll tell you when I come back how it worked. Sound like a good idea. And then I heard people talking about reservations. I heard people talking about surrendering. I heard people talking about it was an inside job. You know, I heard people talking about change. And I thought they was talking about change your underwear. You know, like, or change in your pocket. You know, I didn't really understand. Because this language in Narcotics Anonymous is a lot different than the language on the street. See, the language on the street, when I was on the street, was you got one, you want to go in half. Where we gonna get it from? You know, and people's names were Smokey and Pookie and Little Bit and stuff like that. You know, and people were getting up talking about, hi, my name is Desiree, I'm an addict. You know, they were saying their real names and stuff like this. So I'm sitting there real confused, like, well, what is going on? and they talking about change. I didn't want to change. I just didn't want to smoke no crack. That's all I wanted to change, was just don't smoke no crack. Now, I could keep doing what I had been doing before that. I could snort coke, you know what I mean. But I couldn't smoke no crack. See, I thought crack was the problem. So I said, well, if I smoke crack, then I sell TVs and I stand out on corners and I look, you know, and I do all this. So why do I, okay, just don't smoke no crack, but I want to go back to drinking. I want to go back to smoking weed. I want to go back to snorting, you know, because I was all right when I was doing that. I wasn't homeless when I was doing those things. And a house full of people, you know, the radio was still there, the clothes was in the house, the jewelry was, you know, up in there and stuff like that. But see, when I smoke crack, I sell jewelry. So I figured that that's what the problem was. Well, I kept coming back, and then people started telling me to read the first step. And there's a part in the first step that kind of really gets me, is how when it says in the basic text that, I forgot. Anyway, I can't quote the book. I try, but I can't. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that there's a part in there that talks about, you know, being surrendering to the disease of addiction, and addiction being threefold: mental, physical, and spiritual. And I was like, okay, now what are they talking about? Now they trying to say I'm crazy. You know, now they trying to say something's wrong with me. And one of the things that first happened to me when I first came in here, people would tell me things like, Desiree, we'll do your hair for you. You know, they bought me clothes. They didn't really buy me clothes. They just gave me their clothes. And I had to come to meetings in people's clothes. And I thought people would judge me. And I didn't really want to be here. You know, I had hit such a hard bottom. And people were, you know, I had to wear clothes that were too big for me, clothes that were too little for me, and stuff like that. And I would come to meetings and see people dressed up. And my clothes wasn't like that. You know, mine wasn't no design. I didn't buy no designer clothes till I had 5 years. I didn't have a designer, nothing, till I had 5 years. I ate pork and beans and wieners for 5 years. And I was coming to meetings and people talking about, take your time, get time some time. I'm like, damn, I got 5 years. How much more time I got to give it? You know? And then, you know, and you just really want what you want when you want it. You know, I wanted it then. I wanted the car. I wanted the jewelry. I wanted the cell phone. I didn't care nothing about no spiritual principles, no character, none of that. I just wanted to look good, smell good, and stop eating poker beans and wings. You know, I like shrimp. Crab meat. You know what I mean? So I used to take the pork and beans and I'd bake them. I used to fry them. I used to boil them. I used to chop onions up in them. I used to put mustard in them. I used to put brown sugar in them. I used to put ketchup in them. I used to put barbecue sauce in them. I used to take the hot dogs and fry them. I used to boil them. I mean, I was so sick of eating pork and beans and wieners, and I would be farting in the meetings, right? And I'd be moving like this, right? People talking to me, and I'd be farting, and people be like, well, what's wrong with you? Can't you stay still? But I was, you know, I couldn't stay still. You know, because I ain't want nobody to talk about me, you know. Oh, man, you talking about recovery being hard. Good God, and they keep talking about change. I'm like, change what? You know, the whole time I'm thinking, all I'm thinking is, give me some gold. Give me a pager. Give me some matching clothes. Give me a coat. You know, just a nice coat. Just, you know, a coat that was my size. You know. Man, I kept going to meetings. I kept going to meetings. I kept saying, damn, you know, this shit is taking a long time here. People going to conventions. I went to a meeting one time. I had 6 years. I went to a meeting at 4 o'clock on a Sunday during the convention. There wasn't nobody there. I was like, oh, you know, something ain't right. Don't the meeting supposed to go on? I'm just standing there waiting for the people to come to the meeting. Everybody in Ocean City, I'm standing at the meeting waiting. Because I'm trying to get time, some time, right? I don't know that I'm doing this. But in the meantime, that's what I was doing. I was giving time, some time. I said, man, you know, when can I go to the convention? So the first time I came to Ocean City, I came and got me a bus pass. I rode up and down the street on the bus. I was way down there at the Comfort Inn, like 116th Street. I had to ride on the bus up and down the street. I had to walk to the meetings. My feet be hurting so bad. And I'd just stay at the convention and I'd sit. I wasn't talking to nobody because I was mad because I ain't had no gold. I wasn't hugging nobody because I ain't had no pager. I didn't want to hear what you had to say. I wasn't interested in what you had to say. I was just sitting here. If you just leave me alone, I'll be all right. People would tell me to keep coming back, right? People would say, we're going to love you, and we're going to love you till you learn to love yourself. I really got angry with that one. You know, I was like, okay, now, so what you trying to say? You know, oh, well, we're going to love you in spite of yourself. I'm like, so what you trying to say? You know, and then I tell them, you just keep coming back here. And they say, you too, you know. Man, oh, man, you know, and it's interesting because I sit and I think about how when I came in this program, I wanted relief. And my relief just wasn't coming. And I got relief today. You know, it's interesting. I stand here before you with 11 years, not really wanting to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous, not really wanting to do what this program suggests. But I ended up changing anyway. I ended up having things happen to me anyway, with all the rebellion, with all the defiance, with all the unwillingness. But the three things that I did do was I went to meetings. I keep going to meetings. I didn't use. And I prayed. And I gave time some time. And I was telling a friend of mine the other day, you know, when you come to Ocean City, a lot of people always want to talk about going shopping and buying an outfit before you come down here and all that kind of stuff, you know, and, you know, having your matching gear, you know, and all that. I got matching gear today, y'all. And I got some gold, you know what I mean? See, I wanted that gold. I wanted the gold where I could have it and not have to take it to the pawn shop after getting it. See, I saw people in the meetings doing that kind of stuff. You know, one minute they come to the meeting, they be gold down. Then next week when they come to the meeting, they ain't have on no gold. And I be watching them, you know. And I say, okay. So if you give time some time, you'll get the gold. But the most important thing, you'll get the gold on the inside. To match the gold on the outside. See, my gold matches the gold on the inside. And I never knew what God was doing. All I knew was that I didn't want to smoke no crack. See, fear had me scared to believe in Narcotics Anonymous, but scared to go back to the corner too. I was in a hell of a dilemma. I didn't want to believe y'all, but I didn't want to go back standing on that corner. And I think the reason why I never had any money my first 5 years in this program was because I had a reservation. Those whole 5 years of them poking beans and wieners gave me time to get rid of that reservation. Gave me some time to get some time. You know, so that when things did start to happen in my life, I would know what to do. You know, it's a lot of people in here I love. It's a lot of people in here that give me a lot of support, even when I don't want it. And even with 11 years, I still get support, even when I don't want it. I don't have anything else to say. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank both of the speakers. We have like maybe 10 or 15 minutes. Anyone like to share? We can close for just for today. Someone.